Nice.
If you want to check us out on all of our social media platforms, on Twitter at Tinfoil Hat Cast,
on Instagram at Tinfoil Hat Pod,
or allcomedytshirts.com,
email us at tinfoilhatpod@gmail.com.
Foil hat.
Global controls will have to be imposed, and a world governing body will be created to enforce them.
Welcome to Tinfoil Hat. We go deep, homeboy. Eric, open your mind. Drink from the fountain of knowledge. There's lizard people everywhere. That's some interdimensional shit. Wake up, Eric.
Dude,
you just blew my mind.
I missed that intro. I like it. We should play that more often. Guys, welcome to Tinfoil Hat. You know who we are. You know what we're here to do. I'm with my homeboy, Ryan Davis.
A.K.A. The Goblin.
The Goblin, dude. When the Goblin doesn't eat, he got a saggy diaper, dog. Guys, thank you so much. We're going deep on these episodes. We got September 5th. We got the live show at the Comedy Store. Eddie Bravo, myself, we're putting together Off the Grid Ryan, and we're going to be putting some special guests on that. And then we're going to have some live shows coming up. I'm working on putting together shows. All right? I'm working on it. We'll see what we can do. We're going to try to come to a city near you. All right? So that's it. Check out the t-shirts. The Patreon is cooking with gas. We go hard in the paint, dude. We pull no punches when we drop those truth bombs on you guys. So that's kind of where we're at. So let's get into our guests. Super excited.
You know it. From Just Kidding News, coming the way of Mr. George Kimmel, I got to give it up to the main man, Mr. Joe Jitsukawa.
Nice.
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me.
And thank you for helping us with your last name. We get very nervous about that.
Oh, man, it's all good.
How long did it take you to learn to spell your name?
Actually, my first last name used to be MoMA.
What?
So when my dad left, I said, fuck that guy. I'm gonna take my mom's maiden name.
Really?
And it turned into Jitsukawa. But the funny thing is, MoMA is spelled like mama. So all throughout life, my name was Joe Mama.
Yeah. That's really funny.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Jitsukawa, was there any pressure to learn jiu-jitsu because you had that last name?
I actually took a little bit of MMA, and I did judo when I was a kid. But yeah, it's funny. So the word jitsu means technique.
Oh, really?
But it also means truth or righteousness. So when it's written, you know, it's like it has the same sound, but then it's written differently.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Shit, man. That's got to be crazy. I guess my name's last. I guess we all, when we're young, have crazy last names that take us a little while to learn.
What's Tripoli? Is that a
Tripoli is
Italian, or it sounds like a warrior name?
Yeah, I can't fight anybody, dude, except for Ari Shaffir, and I'll beat that ass. Just kidding. It's an Italian name. I'm my mother's Armenian, my father's Italian.
Cool.
So I go zero to felony very quickly. Right, I love to get a little shady, real shady, and yeah, it's just interesting because when I grew up, you know, out east, they were all Russian Armenians. So you know, and they say you tend to identify closer with your mother's family. It's just the way nature is. So you know, and I love my Italian side too. They're all very close, you know. But I identified definitely a lot with the Armenian side, of course. And they were white Armenians. They look like white people. I thought I was white until I got to LA, and then I got told I'm Armenian, and I realized because, you know, out east they're more Russian Armenian. Here they're more Persian Armenian, which are the dark features and the bulls looking like Dracula with a sweater on.
Oh, that's crazy. I had no idea.
Yeah, it's totally different Armenian. Cool. So when I got here, I didn't know Armenians like piss a lot of people off. That's how it used to be back in the day. So it is what it's very interesting when you get out to this this very multicultural city that we live into. But I want to congratulate you on having an amazing YouTube channel. I mean, dude, that number is insane to me, how many subscribers you have. Because I know some like big comedians that aren't even close. Like, you would be the king shit on Comedy Island if you walked in as a comedian with that many subscribers. Congratulations,
man. Thank you very
much.
Yeah, well, we started this channel in 2012.
Oh, shit.
But I actually been on YouTube for like 11 years now.
We've been talking. You're like OG YouTube.
Yeah, around 2007.
Really?
And when we first started with a channel called Just Kidding Films. and we did sketches and shorts and stuff like that. And it all started because I wanted to do like an In Living Color, but an Asian American style.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, let's be honest, like Asians have now just kind of started getting represented in the Hollywood diversity movement. When we talk diversity in Hollywood, it's white women and black guys for the most part. You know, you just see that. And it's like now we've seen like a couple really successful Asian comedy projects that have taken off. And it's like it's kind of cool because you are like a pretty large demographic. Within the
California,
No, not all over the place. I mean, everywhere you go, I mean, there's a Chinatown.
Right, but in the U.S., we're only like 5%. We're prominent in all the major cities, that's why.
Yeah.
But like, if you go to the Midwest or the little towns, you know, we're just like the nail shop there, or like, you know what I mean?
Right, so, for sure. Oh, yeah, and then you have that really weird Chinese restaurant.
Right.
It's almost like when I grew up, and they probably don't know that much about me. I don't know, I grew up in upstate New York. We had one black family in my city. They were called the Handys. They were lovely. My first love of black women started with Francine Handy. But I remember that a lot of these kids grew up in, like, there were no black people, so they didn't really learn black culture until like they started watching MTV and shit.
Yeah.
So like, did you grow up in Los Angeles?
Yeah, I grew up in a city called Gardena. It used to be predominantly Japanese.
Oh, really?
Back in like the 40s and stuff like that. But when I was growing up, it was mainly black and Hispanic.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then I moved to Monterey Park when I was like 15, which is the highest population of Asian American in America.
Really?
Yeah. SGV, San Gabriel Valley,
you know,
baby.
You want some good Chinese food or anything, go out there, not Chinatown.
Mm. Let me ask you, when does this weird different Asian thing start popping up? Because, you know, within the LAC community, and if we have any Asian listeners, I'm sure I'm going to get shish kebab for this, but it's like within the Latin community, like they're very specific about what Latin they are, you know, and you're like, hey, I'm not Mexican, I'm Peruvian, and then it gets some weird stuff. Within the Asian community, is that there as well?
Yeah, and it goes thousands of years even beyond the Latin community because they have a common ground of, you know, Spanish or Portuguese.
Yeah.
You know, but we don't have that. And I think the difference is as different as Russian and British.
For sure. Or you know like, I mean? Like Europe, like German with French, French with Italian, and, you know, all that.
But it's interesting because I do a lot of, like, I'm a big history buff, and I love studying that stuff. And I was thinking, why is there so much of a separation within Asians versus Europeans? But see, the difference is, I think, Europeans always intermarried to have a powerful kingdom, like the queen of, you know, the princes of France or whatever.
That inbreeding, let's call it.
Right.
They would
team up, right?
Right, they would bang your stuff. Cousin.
But in Asia, that didn't happen. Everyone just stuck to their own world, and even within, like, 30 miles away, they would be isolated cultures.
So interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember during a gnarly acid trip, I had this like revelation that I was like, it's the year 2016 or whenever it was. I was like, there are still Chinese people. Like, how have we not fucked ourselves into a whole different thing? They've been right next to Indians and Russia the whole time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you go to Kazakhstan. I've been to Kazakhstan. You could tell they border China and Russia.
They look half white, half Asian.
Without a doubt, man. Without a doubt, you know?
It was just the revelation of, I was like, the only way we're going to get out of racism is to fuck our way out of races. So we need to, everyone just, whatever portal you came out of, make sure if you're going to breed, make it something different so we can have some awesome.
I do a charity event for the Armenian Bone Marrow Registry, and within that community, the reason we have such a unique bone marrow, our bone marrow is so unique, is because we didn't get along with anybody around our borders in Armenia because they were all Islamic and we were a Christian country. So we just kept humping ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's why we really are hillbillies of like the far European areas, because we didn't mix our genes up with everybody around us. So I could see how that could happen. And then like I go to China a lot to do stand up in Japan. I've done stand up in China, and like there's very few rules when you go to China. Two of them are, don't talk about the government, which I can understand. The big one is no Japanese jokes.
Because, in China?
Yeah, because the Japanese came in and whooped that ass, yeah, dog.
Yeah.
And you think about that. That's like if, like, we were, like, the United States, you can't do jokes about New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Because New Hampshire came and kicked the United States ass.
Yeah.
Like, that little island beat the shit out of this giant fucking country, man. It's such a crazy thing. But then the hierarchy of everything.
Yeah.
Japan, Korea, North Korea, South Korea, and, like, that whole thing, like, within your community, what's the thought of what's going on with North Korea?
I don't think people pay too much mind to North Korea. I think everyone's actually just trying to fork out a living.
Yeah.
That's the
just grinding.
Asian Americans, I think that's what they're trying to focus on, is just hurry up and become a part of the community, you know? Like, that's why I think there's a bigger emphasis on trying to get their kids to become, you know, doctors, lawyers, engineers, politicians, and all that stuff.
Immigrant mentality.
Right, right, right. And then whatever is left back at home, is that's what it is, you know?
Well, do you know how K-Town in L.A. is the biggest population of Koreans outside, I believe, Korea, correct?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
That's L.A. every year. Glendale, Armenia?
Yep. So K-Town, the reason it even began is because in the 60s, the only people that would sell to then immigrants that were coming from Korea were the Jews. And the Jews owned a lot of these liquor stores, right?
Yeah.
And so they're like, we'll sell you our liquor stores. So now you go to K-Town. It's in a predominantly black neighborhood owned by all, like, the liquor stores.
That's
for the most
how
part.
It happened.
And that's why during the riots from 60s up to the 90s, there's 30 years of bad blood between the blacks and the Korean store owners. So when that shit hit the fan, they got up on the roofs, and there's those stories of just full on, like, enough is enough. Like, we've had 30 years of being pushed around. It's crazy. The little, we talk about all the time how LA is just 27 different neighborhoods. We're so segregated.
Oh,
now that I came back from New York, I see LA as the most segregated place ever.
Sure. Did you guys grow up in the East Coast?
I grew up in upstate New York, which is a much different area than New York City. It is literally two different.
I've been to Syracuse.
And that's where I'm from.
Okay,
basically,
cool.
30 miles outside of that. Redneck, you know, good people, but red, like, you don't realize how redneck it is until you leave, and then you go, like, because I went from upstate New York to Vegas, and it was like a culture shock.
Yeah,
but, you know, I go back now, they still got those, like, Napoleon Dynamite sweaters on. There's still those 80s, like, Cape Plus 8
back
haircuts rocking.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like, when I do comedy, it's so much more conservative than I ever remember, man.
So you got to adjust to the crowd.
No, I'm a hammer dog.
You just
I
do
just
whatever.
Like, you come my way. I want to get into, have you ever heard, now who does most of the laundry? This comes off as sounding and completely like, now which one of you Asians do that? No, but my real question is, like, you know, you talked about how liquor stores predominantly, what kind of, was there a particular Asian? Korean?
Yeah, that's the Jewish sold over to the Koreans.
Okay. Is the, dry cleaning, is that a particular group right there? I know it sounds
like
so ignorant.
It was mainly Chinese and Korean, but originally back in the gold rush days, it was Chinese.
And there is there's the whole story that those were giving to the Chinese by the government to basically make up for them building the
that opportunity to do that business.
Yes, like that was like, okay, you guys can have this. This was the business in which they were basically given the opportunity to do, because you had all these guys building these tracks and they needed jobs, and that was what the U.S. government, I had heard, gave to them.
Oh, that's pretty wild. Yeah, but every group though has their little thing, because, you know, a small group would learn a trade. Like, for example, Cambodians, they have all the donut shops. So all the Asian donut shop
owners are mainly Cambodians.
Because during the, you know, that war that happened with Pol Pot, he had a whole massacre and stuff. So there were a lot of Cambodians that helped out the U.S. during the Vietnam War and all that stuff. And when they came here as refugees, the guys that actually gave them a chance and you know, learn a trade and stuff, it was a donut shop guy.
Damn.
Yeah, and then from there, they just started sponsoring their own family members and opening up donut shops all over Southern California. Same thing happened with the Vietnamese and the nail salons.
What?
Yeah, there was
interesting, right?
It's crazy.
It is interesting how everybody finds their kind of niche, man.
Yeah.
So I want to get into, and then we have some questions I know you want to bring up. And I want to look at some of your videos, too, because I see some interesting stuff, and we'll get into some. I wanted to talk to you about there's a, you know, we had kind of talked before about how even on your channel, hey, man, 11 years in, I mean, like the comedy, I mean, for me, if you listen to my old comedy albums compared to what's going on right now, and I'm kind of transitioning that, I realize I have to change it up a little bit on stage. Because as much as I want to rail against the system, if nobody's laughing in the crowd, I'm not doing my... I could be the greatest comic. If nobody's laughing, then nothing matters. So political correctness and the Asian community. The reason I bring this up is because I somewhat got attacked on stage. Not on stage, but something I did on stage by an Asian woman. Mm-hmm. And I just out of nowhere just became... Like, I just a horde of, like, Asian women attacked me.
What did you do?
Yeah, break it down.
I was opening for Tiffany Haddish at USC for day one freshman.
Oh, well, it's a college, of course.
Right. But it was so... I mean, it was all Asian. Right. It was like they synced up or some shit.
Well, we were in the UCs. I think we populate over 40% of the UCs. That's probably why.
Oh, that's so. which is what I want to get into.
Right.
So I kind of got attacked by these girls for being politically incorrect. A friend of mine who is she does stand up. She's being attacked by the Asian community because Esther Koo is her name. Do you know Esther Koo?
Oh, yeah. she's off, though. I can't really believe anything she says.
Okay. Then that's fine, because this is my opinion. She's being attacked by an Asian community as doing, like, bad Asian stereotypes and really, like, feeding into this, like, this perception of Asian people. And then there was... You know, then this woman came out and basically accused her of making it hard to be an Asian woman.
Right.
And then I just got into this whole world of, like, Asian political correctness and what is out there. And have you felt any of this?
I feel like it's true all across the board, regardless if you're Asian or black or anybody. I think everyone, what they're doing is, if they get butt hurt, they don't see it as a problem within themselves. They see it as whoever made them hurt. That's you're wrong for saying what you said. So I don't agree with what's her name, Esther
Koo.
Yeah, I think her comedy sucks and it's not funny and it's outdated.
All right.
And you know, I can see how people get pissed off because it's like everybody has to evolve in comedy, right?
Right.
So if you're doing the same tired joke, and I mean nowadays you can't make a black person picking cotton joke or some shit like that
because
it's just outdated. You gotta change it, like, oh, they love Jordans or something like that, right? And that's the same thing with our community. I think there's just a lot of outdated 1980s Asian jokes that people are still doing, and it's like, grow up or change it up.
The thing I see is that there was this push within this argument of hers is that it was her doing the jokes, but yet this group of people who was attacking her, and for some reason, I jumped in, because whenever I see my friends getting attacked, I just like to get in the mucks, and I just enjoy it. It gets my nipples hard. And the biggest thing I found was that they were saying that her material was leading to discrimination against Asian women, in particular, this fetishizing of Asian women. And any thoughts on that?
Well, okay, I think my stance is I believe nothing is sacred in comedy. You can say whatever the fuck you want. It's a writer's room. I love it. For me, I like it because it's like we should test whatever idea. And it's just ideas. We you know, they're separate from who we are. But I can see what the community is saying. What they're saying is there's a lot of people out there that still don't know an Asian face to face. There's a lot of people out there, especially in the Midwest, that don't even know that we exist and we're a part of America. So if she's the only access to the information, then they're gonna think whatever she says is real. And then they're just going to have this false belief and maybe accidentally, you know, be racist. But it's, you know, I don't think it comes from a bad place. It's just ignorance, right? It just perpetuates the ignorance. And they might not know that, like, oh, shit, this is actually not true. That's why it's funny. They might think it's true. That's why it's funny.
Okay, I got that. Yeah. I learned something called fetishizing. I guess that's a new thing where, like, people sexualize you and you don't like, and it's not a good thing. Like, I've heard that black men complain about that white women has fetishized them as just these sex machines, and that they're complaining about that people want to fuck them. And I find that just a very, like, we're living in this world where when people don't like something, they make it into an offensive thing.
Do you know? I think it's with the rise of identity politics. You know, everything is about group this. And for me, it's really hard for me to get into that because I think more of an individual, and I can't really speak for my group. I can understand what people are saying. But when, you know, this kind of speech comes up, it's like, I like ass.
Yeah.
I like titties. Am I a fetishizer of... No, it's just...
Isn't that everybody?
Right? You have a preference. Everyone has a preference, right? And, you know, if they're happy and they're in love or whatever, and even if... Because it's Asian, who gives a damn? Like, my girlfriend is white, but then I do get accused of, like, oh, you fetishize white women. And I'm like, you know what? 90-something% of my girlfriends have not been white.
Yeah.
But that's not what they see. What they see is, oh, look at this guy with this white girl. You're only doing it for these reasons. Like I've heard the term trophyism.
Yeah.
When a minority man gets with a white woman, they call that trophyism.
That's so weird.
Exactly, because regardless of what girl you're with, you're going to have to still deal with the complaining. You're going to have to still deal with the problems.
Yeah.
Like, there's no ultimate prize here. Like, there's problems.
A wise man once told me, different holes, same problem.
Right?
Right? And it's just like, and that wise man was me. I said that. I made that up. It's very interesting because, you know, within this argument, and I hate bringing it back up to the thing, but there was like this whole thing about, you know, Asians are discriminated against, Asians are, this is racism, and I find that the Asian community, someone put out that the Asian community per capita makes more money than anybody else. Above Jews, above whites, above everybody. They're a pretty successful group.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly two-parent homes.
Right.
Do Asians get divorced? This sounds like the most ignorant podcast, but it's just like, ask an Asian, I feel. But I just...
Well, I come from a broken home.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, my dad left when I was 14.
Okay.
And, you know, it's really hard to say because... Culturally, even from East Asians to Southeast Asians, we're a lot different. You know, that's as different as like South Americans to Europeans. It's a totally different group with different, you know,
cultures and different stuff like that.
And so within the Asian community, we do have groups that are super low income. Like, their household income is like $20,000, $30,000. And I think it was the Hmongs.
Yep. The Hmongs.
Yeah, the Hmong people.
I had a buddy who was a Hmong.
And they're mainly like northern Midwest area. And they, you know, they have it rough. So I think what people see is like, okay, look at these successful East Asians.
Yeah.
They come here with money. They don't have any struggles. But what about all the war refugees, the Vietnamese refugees, the Cambodian refugees? Like, there's... people that come here uneducated with problems. So they, I think they probably sympathize more with like, poor liberal inner city folks.
Yeah.
So I think within the community, it's divided. I mean, I think it's the same with all groups though.
Yeah,
right?
Like, sure. Yeah.
But,
for sure.
But yeah, I think what's hard is we're not really out there speaking. Meeting people, we stay, we keep within ourselves.
Because you guys grind, right? You guys are grinders, and it's a very inclusive. Your community is very inclusive, Mark.
And culturally, we don't like attention.
Yeah.
So we don't want to cause disruption because everything is about harmony, right? So most people, unless they're Asian American, they've been here for quite a while. Like, they just don't want to attract attention, negative attention. So because of that reason, it's hard to get to know. Like, it's just this mysterious group. And it's like, what are they? What are they saying? What do they, you know, how do they feel about being American? I think there's a lot of that. But it's going to start coming out because, you know, there's more and more of us that are Americanizing and you know, there's...
Blending. It's all about blending in, dude. It's all always been about that. We're in this just unique time right now. And it's only been about the last, I'd say, 15 years where it's all about this. We got to have our niche. This is our thing. You know, like, I never learned Armenian because my mother, her parents were like, no, you got to learn English. You're an English person. And it's only recently, and I can get into all the social engineering of that and how it's like make everybody fight with each other. It was more about, you know... back in the day, it was more about just blending in.
Right. I believe in that divide and conquer shit, man. It's real. That shit is real.
Are you a conspiracy theorist? We'll get off like Askanasian, and I hope that wasn't. I just always found it so interesting going through that whole moment with Esther Koo about like a whole world that I didn't even understand. So I'll take the beating on the comments.
I'm hoping when you guys have Sam on Just Kidding News, you have a whole segment of Ask a Crazy Person.
Yeah, so I'm totally fine with that. And you that's pretty much everything.
Yeah, no, I do believe in conspiracy. The only reason why is because I've seen shit firsthand.
Oh, really? Tell us.
So back in early 2000s, I have a relative who's a CPA and a financial advisor, right? And he had a client that created an engine that can go around 500 miles per gallon. So this is, no one was even talking about hybrid cars and all that stuff back then, I believe, you know? But what he said is, so a lot of people started knocking on his door when he threw the patents in. And then they were like, let me buy it. Car manufacturers, all these people. He's like, nope, this is going to change the world. And all I care about is making the world better, right? And then one day he got a call from his client. He goes, "We gotta quit this. I can't tell you anything. I just can't do this. I'm selling it." And then he hung up. So he never heard from his client ever again. And I think what ended up happening is
they threatened
somebody him. Got to him in his family. Yeah. Oh, and from that point up, I started waking up like, what the heck is going on?
Wow. For sure,
who would
dude.
Prevent something so great, you know?
Oil companies.
Exactly. So I dug up some shit, and then I found this thing about a conspiracy that turned true. So one thing, growing up in L.A., I was like, why don't we have trains? Why is our public transportation so fucking sorry?
Yeah, yeah.
The car companies bought up all the railroads.
Yeah.
They made fake, you know, trolley companies. We used to have a lot. I heard from old folks, like, you know, my grandparents and all, they would say, like, yeah, you know, we used to pay, like, 10 cents or some shit and go to Santa Monica. I don't know what happened. And then you'll see all these rails. They used to be there.
Right.
They bought them up, and then they trashed all of it because they wanted us to all be auto buyers.
Yep. Do you know where we've talked about this before. Do you know where our mass transit is right now, LA's mass transit? Mm-mm. It's in Mexico City. They took it all and they transported it down to Mexico City.
So they're using our old trolleys and stuff like that.
You know, like, we're it's taking forever to put into subway system.
Yeah.
When we have a subway system that is, like, down there that's so old school.
Right.
That they just don't want to use because there's no money in just fixing up an old one. They got to build everything new.
Yeah. And now I see a building right now.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then you got Beverly Hills not letting them put a subway system through. It's like, I don't care how rich you are, you hate traffic.
I know.
This would make traffic so much fucking better. Right. That's so interesting. I'm totally with you on
that.
And
with the smog and everything, it's just destructive, man. So I love business and I love capitalism. But when it becomes destructive, that's when I'm like, fuck this, man. What can we do? What can we do that can change this shit, right?
Yeah, I mean, capitalism is out of control. I get yelled at all the time on this show. It's like the capitalism of only the back to the 80s is not the capitalism we have right now. The capitalism we have now is unchecked greed, international corporations who just control everything. There's no checks or balances. Mm-hmm. And worst of all, there's no accountability. If you tank the economy, which we've talked about a couple episodes with Payan, it's coming, dude. I mean, like, you cannot build an economy built on paper money without any checks and balances.
That fiat's going to crash.
Yeah.
That's why I'm in crypto, man. I'm just like, watch out.
How long have you been in cryptocurrency?
Last year, I got into it before the spike, so around February. But man,
are you addicted?
What crypto are you in?
I'm in a little bit of Bitcoin, but OMG is my thing right now. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't know about that, but they're trying to.
Are you keeping it a secret? Can we hear what it is?
Well, no. I mean, OMG is a great project. I love what they stand for. And they're trying to bank the unbanked in Southeast Asia. So a lot of people have smartphones out there, but a lot of corrupt governments, banking, and all that, they don't trust it. There's a lot of people living in villages. They have smartphones. They do all their transactions through there. But with OMG, they're going to try to get those guys on board. So I love projects that actually give power to the people. Wow. Yeah.
Trip out.
It's very interesting. Do you ever get worried about what crypto represents? One world. You know, he's always talking about when the internet goes out, what are you going to do? What happens if all your money's in crypto? Not that it's all going to be a big chunk.
It's money I can lose.
Right.
Yeah. But I'm just helpful, you know, because I think I'm an optimist. So when I think about it, I feel like humans always correct it. Like, there could be a lot of corruption or whatever, but then it'll eventually correct. But the one world government thing is kind of scary because you can't just treat it as one thing.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like, who invented it? Yakusama or whatever his name is. And then, like, where did it start? Nobody knows. Who created it? Nobody knows. How does it go up and down? Just there's so much. What? Yeah. Do we know?
I mean, it's just as crazy as the stock market.
Right.
A bunch of guys shaking their fist when they ring a bell and just yelling.
I guess that is true, but at the same time, there's also, like, I guess there's a system that's been in place forever.
Right.
That has, like, a regulation company. There's somebody who regulates this. We know the good and the bad. There's so much involved that it just is so, like, yeah.
It's pretty
just,
crazy, though.
It is crazy, right? Well,
see, I grew up in Southern California mainly with Filipinos. So my idea of what Asians are, Pacific Islanders, is they're either going to be DJs, they're going to be break dancers, or entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And in your case, you're an entrepreneur.
Yes.
So
yeah.
I'm just wondering.
Did you ever break dance?
A little bit, but I did more popping.
So did this guy.
What'd you want to ask?
Yeah, so you've been now, you've had JK News for 11 years, you said on the you've seen the internet change.
Oh, yeah.
Do you guys censor yourself even more so now with the...
I think there's just certain words we stay away from because you can't... I mean, you got to grow with the times, you know? Like, if people aren't cool with us using a certain word. Like, for example, the N-word, right?
Yeah.
Like, in early 2000, even the 1990s, what I feel like is, since I grew up in a majority black community, my friends were encouraging me. They were like, you gotta talk like this, man. Why you talk like a square or whatever?
Oh, that's so interesting.
So I started speaking like that, and then when I moved to an all-Asian neighborhood, they're like, why you talk so black?
Yeah.
Right? And I was like, oh, okay, well, maybe I just gotta be myself. But back then, I remember white guys, Mexican guys, everyone said it as a term of endearment,
yeah.
Right? But today, I think there's a lot of black folks that don't like it. So to me, it's like, okay, well, I don't have to say it. If you're conflicted within the community, whether it's okay or not okay or whatever, then I'm just going to stay away from it completely. So things like that, I think I stay away from certain words, but I don't try to censor my thoughts. I just try to be more tactful in the way that I want to say a subject or whatever.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, like, my whole thing, I mean, I got lit up on Facebook, and I'll say it again. I don't think anyone should say the N-word. I think it's an ugly word.
Yeah.
There's the black community is not taking it back. You know why there's never been a slur for white people that is just a good slur outside of racist? Racist is literally the only slur that gets, because it gets the white people.
Oh.
Everything else is like honky,
really?
Whatever. Everyone's like,
it's kind of cute.
Nobody cares.
Honky's kind of cute.
Right? Because they don't take it back. They said they don't care because that is taking it back.
Right.
Right?
It's that Jim Jefferies joke when they're yelling at him on the plane. They're like, racist. And he's like, I am, but how do you know?
Right? It's the only word that gets what they scramble when somebody said, no, why could you say that? It is, in a weird way, the only N-word for white people.
Right. I've been called honky, and I died of laughter. And I was like, can we please bring honky back? Like,
because it's a cute word, man. How is that offensive?
And where does it come from?
It's probably horrible. I don't even want
it. Just honking your horn? What is it?
I can't imagine. It can't be good.
You know what was interesting is that I found out recently that back in the day, Irish, Jewish, Italian wasn't considered white.
Oh, no.
I was like, what?
Because
in L.A., if you're Jewish, you're considered white.
Well, just think about what that was back in the day. It's like, so now, you know, we're getting all upset, you know, we got people upset about our borders and these Latinos coming in and they're flipping out. Well, back in the day, you know, you had these, like, basically British, you know, for the most part, colonizing America. If you want to go back to the El Dorado episode, Lost Tribes of Israel stuff coming here. And then all these other ethnic groups that weren't like the white,
right.
You know, like what blonde hair, blue-eyed look that traditional white is. And like, oh, yeah, it was, you know, back in the day, if you were Italian, you didn't fuck an Irish person.
Because
that was interracial back at that day. That was an interracial thing. So when you find out, you're like... We have to think sometimes about how much of trailblazers our mothers were back in the day when they were like, fuck yeah, I'm going to date a fucking Italian guy. And that was my mom. She was Armenian. She didn't date outside Armenia. She's like, I'm going to date an Italian. And like that.
That's crazy.
And then you look at like girls who did like interracial porn in like the 80s. Like that was like some serious trailblazing shit. They're like, fuck it. I'm banging black guys. Nobody gives a shit. And like that was some serious fucking trailblazing if you think about that.
It's like me, gingers for pegging, dude. I'll be like the, you know, the Rosa Parks
of my own. They got a little weird.
So is that thought kind of the same till this day or
No, I think if you're Irish, you date an Italian. If you're German, you could date a Jew. And there's like jokes here. I think the Italian-Irish thing is kind of done.
So on St. Patrick's Day, you got to have your corned beef and cabbage. Mm-hmm. They don't eat that in Ireland.
So, that's an American thing.
Yep. So the Irish, they were only able to like afford like real cheap food, and the Jews owned the delis, and the cheapest food there was corned beef. So this all comes from the Jews selling to the Irish. It's a New York based thing.
That's pretty cool.
Well, within the Asian community, is there still like, hey, I'm going to date this Thai chick? You're like, you're Korean, dog. We don't date them Thais.
Yeah, I think we might be in that stage right now.
Still?
Right.
Or it's like now it's starting to open up.
Well, because I think there's still a lot of new immigrants coming in. But a good example of what it can be is Hawaii, because Asians have been in there since the 1800s, right? So there's a lot of mixed people.
And you got to bang that Thai ass. They got the fat ass, right? Thai's got the ghetto fat ass.
Thai girls?
No, Koreans have thick thighs.
Yeah, who's got the fattest ass of
Asians? I
would
say
we can break
Filipino girls are probably Southeast Asian girls.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe I just go by Tara Patrick, who's Thai, and I've seen like...
Oh, she's Thai?
Yeah, she's the leader
of the... I thought she was Filipino this whole time.
No, she's Thai. I'm friends with her. She lives in Europe now, but...
Oh, shit, I had no idea.
Yeah.
See, we can't tell each other apart. Yeah.
Well, I think Bobby Lee is doing a little service for your people. He's, he's married and now with Kalila, who's a Filipino, a fellow Mud River person, as he calls her.
Mud River, the jungle Asian. Yeah. That's what he calls her.
So he's doing his part. He's breeding in... keeping it going.
Yeah, I think I always say if I do marry my girlfriend, I'm gonna raise little oppressors, because she's white and I'm Japanese, so we're the
now let's face it, Japanese are pretty high on the fucking list, right? They're like on the ladder. Japanese are pretty high.
Yeah, I mean, the way it happened though is because they were the first to industrialize out of all the Asians. They're an island, so they were protected from colonization.
Right.
And all that stuff.
And they were samurais, too.
Well, that's funny because, you know, people think this mystical they were like assholes.
Yeah.
They were just mercenaries, man.
They would just go in there and light shit up.
Yeah.
Japanese don't give a fuck, right? What are some videos you guys have talked about that maybe are in... What does your channel talk about? Now, it's not... Is it news?
The way it works is... I mean, you can see a recent
featuring
one or whatever.
Theo Vaughn? Come on.
Oh, yeah. Is Theo your friend?
Oh, I love him.
Oh, man. We're going to actually have him again this week. Oh, he's awesome, man.
Yeah,
people love him.
He's a wonderful
I think we were his first, like, Asian friends, dude. He was like, he told us he's never been around.
Hey, man, I've never had an Asian friend before.
Yeah.
He has a story about driving across, like, a couple state lines.
We play videos and we get in trouble.
We're not.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, because they flag you on shit.
Oh, you know what? If you guys get flagged for our stuff, it's not us doing it. It's just an auto thing that happens on YouTube.
Of course. So that's why I kind of just hold off on, because we just got monetized.
Yeah.
So it's like a big day in Christmas, but then they're looking for any kind of reason to unmonetize us.
Yeah, they'll fuck with you. Well, but the way that the channel works for us is we have one reporter. She memorizes all the news of the day. And then she just kind of says, all right, so this happened. And then the rest of us just freestyle comment.
How many Asians are on the show? Is it like is it like, am I watching a Pacquiao fight where there's like 30 people living in the house?
No, we have like 3 or 4 Asians. We have a guest who's, you know, I don't know, sometimes white, sometimes whatever. And then we have 2 Hispanic.
Oh, that's good.
It's LA,
that's a nice
baby.
Plan.
Yeah, that is the demographic of LA, right?
Yeah, not wrong with that. Yeah. When did you see the big jump?
You mean like...
when did you go from, okay, I'm just doing this kind of thing, and then all of a sudden you're like, whoa, we got this many subscribers.
We never really blew up like that. Yeah, it was just always small. It was always we slowly grew, and I think when we all quit our jobs and hit this 100%, when it really blew up. That was like in 2010 or 11.
And you've seen this like explosion.
Man, YouTube made a lot of different. It had a lot of different eras in this short period of time. Yeah, it went from cat videos to like now this fucking drama and garbage. Like, it's different now.
Oh, you mean drama almost like these YouTube stars who are kind of like Jersey Shore shit?
Yeah, I mean, they construct a lot of fraud, like fake shit for entertainment. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It used to be a place of like, oh, this is raw, real shit. And then they started faking pranks and like doing all kinds of, you know, shit to just get clicks.
What is your thoughts on YouTube censorship?
So I get the business aspect of it because, you know, I don't know if you heard of the adpocalypse.
No.
Okay, so a couple years ago, you know, big brands didn't like it that their ads would run on like an ISIS beheading video, or whatever. All these things would pop up and they can't control it. I mean, I think YouTube uploads 40,000 hours worth of video per day or some outrageous amount.
How do
amount.
They afford the bandwidth?
It's the
CIA?
It's the Google
on,
conspiracy,
dog.
Man. Yeah, I don't know.
Afford?
Yeah, I don't. I have no idea how that works. But what ended up happening was all these big brands started pulling out. I don't know what the reasons were behind it. There's probably some top-level shit going on. But that started hurting, like, the regular guys, you know? And from that point on, it got really fucked up.
Yeah, it's kind of been weird. We get shadow banned a lot. Mm-hmm. People say they can't. They get I watch it unsubscribed. Like we'll be like we'll be let's say 700. We're like got 20,000, but let's say we get up to like 21,750.
Yep.
And then I'll refresh it, and it will drop right down to 700.
So it's correcting.
So what does that correcting mean?
I have no idea. But right now, what they're doing is if your video doesn't get much traction within the first hour, it kind of sits there stagnant. They don't give it that much.
God damn.
So you got to be super active, man. Like back in the day, you know, if I had a bunch of subscribers, see that number up there, 1.7 million subscribers, right?
That's a lot.
Right. But our videos get about 200,000 views. So that the math just doesn't add up. Mm-hmm. We used to get like 500,000. But what happened was if people aren't clicking every single day, you don't pop up because, you know, they're trying.
These assholes.
It's fucked up, man.
And then Twitter gets rid of all of our porn bots. Why'd you get rid of porn bots? All they want to do is send hot naked pics and have nasty sex. What's wrong with them?
I like it when they like my comments.
Oh, yeah.
I always thought a hot girl was liking my shit, and I'm like, oh, fuck.
Oh, porn bot. Bad porn bot. Now, I saw you had a video up. It was the shootings in Vegas. Our last episode, we kind of went into all that stuff. And what's your take on that? Because we have a guy who's our sound engineer. He believes everything that happened went down the way that creepy FBI guy made the sheriff say it went down. So he believes that. And he loves stuffed crust pizza and baseball and just making love.
I didn't know stuffed crust pizza still existed.
Yeah, and he loves making love to his wife eyeball to eyeball. So that's who we're dealing with. What is your thoughts on that?
All right, so I don't believe anything the media tells us.
Yeah.
Because it's always, there's an agenda, regardless if it's to push more sales or stocks or something, right? Because it's not really for us, it's for money movement.
Right.
So there's a few things that I have my own theories on. One is every time there is a mass shooting, every time the gun sales go fucking crazy. Like, I have a few buddies who manage gun stores, and they call me up, you better get it right now or else it's gone. I'll go to their store, boom, everything is gone. Every single shooting. So it could be that people are in cahoots to create this so, you know, the manufacturers could make a ton of money. And how I came to this conclusion is because there's proof that this has happened in politics before recently. There's a senator by the name of Leland Chen, I believe. He and this guy named Shrimp Boy, there was a documentary on him on
So Gangland. The senator has a friend named Shrimp Boy?
Shrimp Boy is a notorious triad member in San Francisco Chinatown. There was a documentary. And they were working together to run guns. Leland Chen is a Democrat who puts a fuck ton of laws on anti-gun stuff so he could raise up the price of guns. So, since
Holy
that happened
shit,
on a
man.
Local level, It happens on a local level. What makes you think they won't do this on a fucking national level?
That's unbelievable. Right?
That's one of the things I have. The other one is on the night there was a Saudi prince that was on the top floor of the Mandalay Bay. And during that time, there was a coup d'etat happening within the Saudi Arabian government. And I think
Saudi purge.
They wanted to grab this guy up. So they were creating some type of shit to go down. And there is a helicopter that left during the same time.
Yes.
So there's two things that make me go, what's really going down, you know?
Yes, man. We talked about in the last episode, there's so much stuff. FBI, basically this fucking intelligence agent company that works with intelligence agency, owned the same plane that Stephen Paddock did. More people in the room than they announced. The police just standing around while the shots are being fired. I mean, there's so much. Multiple witnesses seeing multiple shootings.
And there's no motive.
You know?
There's no motive. People can't find out why. What was your take on it?
Oh, I think he was a gun runner. I think they set him up for a gun run, and they set him up, and they made him a patsy. It's basically, you ever see God of War with Nicolas Cage? It's an old movie. Yes.
Yeah. I love that
and
movie.
How they arrest him, and he goes, do you know what's going to happen here? Mm-hmm. They're going to walk in, and they're going to release me because I do the job that they can't do. So this guy sells guns to people that the government can't do or else people would go nuts, you know? Yeah. So that's his job. And I think that he was getting crazy, starting to sue all these fucking casinos. And it's like, you don't do that when you have that fucking job.
That's crazy.
What do you think about the idea that it was a blood sacrifice by the elite in front of a pyramid, a black pyramid?
Oh, yeah. We didn't even talk about that.
Oh, you mean the Luxor?
Yeah.
So it was like a satanic ritual or something like that?
So in Freemasonry, not that all Freemasons are evil.
Yeah.
One of the things they do is they remove their shoes, or one shoe to be exact, in a ceremony. And a lot of these people...
So you just walk around with one shoe around?
It's the idea that you're standing on holy ground. You remove your shoes to stand on holy ground.
Hmm.
A lot of these people that, victims, they're found without their shoes on. And this is like shown in the media. This is ways for them to leave a
like
calling,
symbolism, like, hey, we did this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Damn.
I mean, you see no shoes, all that stuff. Yeah. I mean, there's so much stuff going on in Vegas that's just... fucking crazy, too.
We've got a really special guy coming in. I'm not going to say his name, but he is the end-all of false flags. So stay tuned. When we do get this guy on, you're going to know.
He has some real insider shit.
He has been on the false flag search since.
Man, that's crazy.
Very long time ago. It is crazy, right?
It's not hard to believe, though. So that's the thing. Like, when I bring up this kind of shit on my channel, right? Like, we're more goofy. We don't get too deep. But a lot of people look at me like, that, no way, that can't happen.
What are you talking about?
If this shit can happen on a small scale and it's proven to happen, what makes you think on a bigger scale it can't?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right?
Without a doubt, man. I sit there and I tell you that. It's like they've been doing this shit forever. I mean, there's some conspiracy. We call it black belt shit. Maybe triple black belt shit they can't get into. But just basically setting up stuff to get people angry. So we react. You know, that whole thing is probably going to be so they can put body scanners and all that. Because these people at the highest level, these billionaires, look at us like cattle.
We're just pawns.
We're just zeros and ones.
Resource. And that's what I hate about what's going on right now, because people are so outraged, but they don't know they're feeding into the game.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing I want to go out there and like push, is that divide and conquer is fucking real. I mentioned it earlier.
Yeah.
But I saw it recently when I went to go visit my girlfriend's family out in Texas, right? Like, super nice, sweet, on the right side, whatever. But the way that I'm programmed here in Southern California, the liberal type of education, all from elementary school till college, I'm programmed to resent and hate Republicans and white people.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, because people here don't see it.
Yeah.
They don't see that we're automatically trained to look at a white person and say, he's evil colonist, he's gonna do something mean to me, I can't trust him, right?
Right.
And then people over there are programmed to think, look at these minorities taking up our space, doing all this shit, right? The funny thing was, when I opened up my phone, everything was right-wing media. Everything. in Texas.
So interesting.
And yeah, and then we did a road trip back, New Mexico, Arizona, everything. I was like, hey, this is crazy. I don't even click this stuff. How does this open up? Like,
that's so interesting.
When I got back in California,
boom, it goes the other
everything
way.
Everything is the left wing echo chamber.
For sure, dude. Right. That goes back to Bill Clinton deregulating the media in the 90s, where it used to be like Reagan started, where you used to have you had to have the opposition on your news channel. So when you gave something, you give the opposite side's argument. Well, Reagan got rid of that. Mm. So now you didn't need that. And then Clinton comes in, deregulates media. So now you have Fox News telling that side what they want to hear, MSNBC telling them what they want to hear. And what people don't realize, there's a lot of astroturfing going on, okay? And astroturfing is when you basically, you make some seem like it's a grassroots movement, and it's not.
Yeah.
And it's artificially made.
Yeah.
And let's take the whole thing white privilege, right? Let's take what white privilege is, okay?
Yeah.
When you see, I saw this video of these two white trash women, look like sisters, yelling at this Mexican family.
Yeah.
And the guy who tweeted, like, this is what white privilege is.
Yeah.
And I know these, I don't know them personally, but I grew up around that.
Right.
And I will tell you that there's nothing privilege about those two white women.
Right.
They were most likely born into a world of shit, ignorant as fuck, no one taught them life skills, and they're only acting like this because they don't see hope in their... hope in their life.
Right.
I'm not saying they're good people. We should forgive them.
No. I know exactly what you're talking about. I think when people make that white privilege argument about them is specifically how they were so confident in the cop taking their side and knowing that telling on the minority is going to get them in trouble. But what I don't agree with the idea of white privilege is that all white people are privileged, which is totally not the case. There's so many generationally poor And the highest people on welfare are actually white people.
For sure.
Right? And then the biggest population of people that are, you know, going to jail and all that is white. So how is that privilege in any way? What they're saying is look at these small few people that just so happen to be white that seem like they have all the power. It's a scapegoat.
Well, I mean, we look at – I would tell you it's probably way more than a small group. I would tell you that – what we see in LA, which is, rich, white, you know, these giant things.
Right.
Come with me to upstate New York, dude.
Right.
I mean, like, my mom's the teacher there. She used to teach. She would just see, like, kids coming. Like, if I tell you, we're in a city where kids go, where they're not washed, have dirty clothes, have no food, parents dropped out on drugs. Where am I talking about? Gary, Indiana? No, I'm talking about fucking Homer, New York, Cortland, New York, where it's like these kids, white trash kids, parents hooked on drugs and all that stuff. And it is we are more alike than we are different, okay?
Right.
Cultural appropriation is a great example of a manufactured thing that is made to get people to get mad. Hey, you're dressing like my people did. It's like, dude, this is a melting pot. You do not want people pulling their shit out and everybody just using it. It's the beauty of everything, man, of all of us together. Hi. Okay, we're getting out. We got to get going. God dang it, I
real
enjoyed
quick, though, it. Can I make a comment about the cultural appropriation thing? So I think the main point and the main logical argument that people are trying to make about that is just we want to be in control of our narrative. And since, you know, we are such a small minority group, we don't own Hollywood. We can't tell our own stories. We have Van Damme doing, you know, things that are like...
I would agree with that.
Right? So all we want to do is tell our own story. Where it gets fucked up is when we have these SJWs that go, look at this white girl wearing a prom dress. Fuck her. That's my culture. No, that is not the real case there. That's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
It's just the white girl that enjoys a Chinese dress. Who the fuck cares, right? But I think the bigger picture, and all that stuff gets drowned out because
of that, of the craziness.
Because of the crazy people. Yeah.
Well, man, you, my friend, are excellent. I'm very upset that we won't be able to talk. We have another show coming in. I would like you to come back sometime.
Oh, I would love it, dude. I love talking about this stuff, bro.
And we won't do Ask an Asian for the first.
No,
wanted to get into the political correctness of
it.
So I hope you don't, and the listeners don't take offense to that, because, you know, I just want to see that whole, how the culture. So I appreciate you coming on. If you can just push all your stuff real quick to our crowd, and then we could... we could go up from there.
Yeah, so you could check out our talk show, Just Kidding News. Go ahead and type that in for YouTube. Or my personal channel, Joe Jitsukawa. JoeJitsukawa.
You are a wonderful person, man.
Thank you, Sam.
I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, and I hope we can do it again very soon in the near future. Any final thoughts, Ryan?
Nah, man. It's been a pleasure. No. I can't wait to see you on Just Kidding News.
Yes, we got to have you on, brother.
For sure. It'd be great. Right. You guys are the best. We see you guys soon. Take care, and I will see you when we see you. Take care, everybody. Oh.